and welcome to Ag PhD Radio. I'm Darren Hefty.
And I'm Brian Hefty. Thanks for joining us today. Today in the show, we're going to talk a little about nutrient deficiencies in corn. But if you've got any questions for us, or if there's anything you'd like to talk about that's going on in your farm, our number here is 844-44-AG-PHD. That's 844-442-4743. Or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. You can also find us on Twitter, AgPhD Media, Brian Hefty, or Darren Hefty. So when it comes to nutrient deficiencies, and I don't really care what it is, corn, soybeans, wheat, any crop that you raise, I think this is incredibly important to talk about at this time of the year when so much of the crop is going in the United States and Canada. Look at your soil tests. That's really where it starts. So yes, later on, you can walk out in the field in the middle of the summer and go, oh man, my crop is too yellow or purple or whatever off color it is. And let's hope that that doesn't happen, because that's a bad day. When you walk out there and you see your crop the wrong color, you've lost a ton of yield and a ton of money at a time when, let's face it, none of us as farmers can afford that right now. Crop prices are not what we want. I mean, if you're a grain farmer. Now, granted, if you're buying the crop, you're probably going, well, this is awesome because it's cheap. This isn't going to last forever. This isn't even going to last all that long, I don't think. We're going to come back. A lot of commodity prices are going to come back. But in the short term, yeah, things are going to be tough here for a little while. But my point is, we don't want to have these nutrient deficiencies anytime, any dollar amount, doesn't matter. There are things that you can look for in advance to get these things taken care of. So we talk about soil tests all the time here on the show. And we'd really encourage you, if you've got soil test questions, call us, send us emails, ask us. I mean, other than drainage, nutrients are the most important thing that you've got to manage on your farm. And I realize that you probably spend a lot of time talking about seed varieties to people. You spend maybe even more time trying to find a great deal on herbicide or something. I mean, that's pennies compared to what we're talking about in terms of nutrients. If you get the nutrient balance and amount right in your soil, it's fantastic. It makes you so much more money. It all comes back to, where are you going to invest your dollars? How do you invest those dollars wisely? So all throughout the show today, we'll be talking about these nutrient deficiencies. We said in corn, but quite frankly, it's every crop. So I don't care what crop you raise, you're going to love today's show. We will get to that all throughout our time today. We also will take your questions. Again, you can call us 844-44-AG-PHD or email us radio@agphd.com. We're going to get to the Ag PhD mailbag here in just a second. We are live in the Morton studio today, and I'll just give you a quick update on our own farm. We should finish, I'm hoping we'll finish soybean planting for the most part tomorrow. We already have our grain corn done, got that done a few days ago. Just going to be working on silage corn here, actually probably starting tomorrow now. So I'm hoping by the end of the week, we're mostly done planting in our farm, which if that's the case, if we can finish the end of this week or early next week, that'd be about the earliest we've ever finished. I like the timing. I love planting early. It's great. It's just that most years we're not dry enough to plant early. And this year we are definitely dry enough. In fact, I just told our guys, in terms of this field, I want to get planted tomorrow. Don't work the ground today, because I'm worried that it's going to dry out by tomorrow. So if that gives you any idea how things have changed in the last year, it's incredible. In our area last year, roughly 30 to 40% of the acres went unplanted. Now, we didn't have any unplant acres or prevent plant acres, but a lot of people around us did. So yeah, this year we're dealing with too dry. Last year and the year before, dealing with too wet. All right, let's get to the Ag PhD mailbag.
It's the mailbag!
All right, Brian, got two wheat questions I want to kick the show off with. The first one comes from Dez, who says he heard us talking about wheat herbicides and adding a fungicide in at the same time at a half a rate, and it would only cost a couple of bucks. He said, just curious which products he should look for that would be reasonably priced like that, that okay, would do a good job for fungicides.
All right. Now, first of all, as soon as we have this talk about half rate, that's early. Okay. When you're spraying small crop, there's no big issue using a lower rate because you have a tiny percentage of the crop that's going to be there later on. So it's just like we talk about all the time with medicine for adults and kids. There's an adult dose and a kid dose. What is the kid dose? It's basically a half rate or a third rate. Same kind of thing with fungicide. So if you're spraying little crop, like at herbicide timing, though that wheat's tiny, then that's when people are running reduced rates and having good success. So the product specifically that I was talking about, when you get down to $2, that would be Tilt or one of the generic versions of that. Okay, so propiconazole. If you want to use that, fine. Personally, if it was me, I would go to Nexacor. That's three modes of action, and the low rate on that costs about $5. So you're only talking about a difference of about $3 an acre, but you can get two more modes of action and a lot better control, so that's what I would do.
Okay, thanks for the question, Des. And then the other wheat question I wanted to get to is Nick from Wisconsin. He said, we're shooting for 135 bushel wheat. We've been using a half ounce of Affinity Broad Spec with 8 ounces of 2,4-D LV4. Now, you're not the first ones to claim 2,4-D can be hard on the crop. I'm wondering, would Buctrol be a better option than the 2,4-D? We would like to use Husky, but we really can't due to the rotational restrictions for peas, canola, and sunflowers, which are in our mix.
Okay, peas, canola, sunflower. Yeah, I just wanted to write that down, so I had that. All right, so will Buctrol work? Well, it all depends on what your weed spectrum is. Buctrol is great on lamb's quarters, cockleburr, sunflower.
Yeah, you look at a lot of the mixes that are out there, though. We have Bronate and even Husky has a good strong rate of Buctrol in there with an HPPD. So Buctrol is used quite a bit in wheat.
Yeah, it is, but you can't throw Bronate in there because all of a sudden you're back to 2,4-D again. But where I'm going with this is it depends on your weed spectrum. So you'd have to let me know what your weed spectrum is. Here's my concern. ALS-resistant kochia, ALS-resistant water hemp, because your combination of Buctrol and Affinity Broad Spec is not going to do a real great job on either one of those, especially the water hemp. Buctrol has some activity on kochia. It's not terrible. It's got a little activity in water hemp, not great. But yeah, I mean, that could be your downfall. So anyway, let us know specifically what weeds you're after, and then we'll give you a better recommendation. Well, stay tuned. We'll talk about nutrient deficiencies coming up right after this.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer amaranth or water hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like water hemp and Palmer amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Find your full potential and increase your bottom line with branded generic fungicides from Atticus LLC. Fungal diseases can be devastating, but Acadia, Slant, and Talaris 4.5F from Atticus deliver lasting, broad-spectrum fungi control so your soybeans, sugar beets, and dry beans can thrive. Growers across the region count on Atticus for relevant and reliable products that deliver results every time. Ask your local retailer about Atticus products and visit AtticusLLC.com to learn more. For value-based solutions you can trust, turn to Atticus. Always read and follow label instructions.
Hey, Adam. New drone?
Not just any drone. I mounted a laser on it to take out weeds.
Look out for that tree! In the power lines!
Oh, it's in for the house.
There's a simpler way to protect spring wheat from weeds. Perfect Match Herbicide. The broadest spectrum weed and grass control in one product. Learn more at PerfectMatchHerbicide.com. Always read and follow label directions.
The laser.
Before it's too late and white mold becomes a problem, you need to ask your seed dealer for Heads Up Seed Treatment. When raising soybeans in the Midwest, you know the risk of being caught unprepared. As heard on AgPhD, there are several steps you can take prior to planting for a successful management plan against white mold. Compatible and cost-effective season-long protection starts now by asking your seed dealer to apply Heads Up to your 2020 bean seed order. For more information, visit headsupst.com.
Back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. We're talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn. Hopefully you don't see any in your fields, but if you do, we'd like to give you an idea of where to start. We'd also like to help you with any agronomic questions you may have today. Our phone lines are going to be open throughout the show at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Let's head over to Michigan right now. We've got our friend John Leaf with us with AgroLiquid. John, thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Okay, we're talking about nutrient deficiencies in corn, and one of the places I wanted to start is these prevent plant acres. We've gotten so many questions really starting last year about, oh no, I've got fields I'm not going to get into. What kind of problems could I anticipate for 2020? Well, here we are in 2020, and a lot of those fields are now being planted. What should farmers be on the lookout on the unplanted acres from last year?
Well, you're going to have certainly those nutrients that are soluble, things like nitrogen, sulfur, boron, a few of those things you're going to definitely want to keep track of, because there was really nothing there to take those up last year. And then, of course, maintaining good nitrogen program, especially if the bacteria and everything in the soil was not as active as it could be from last year's prevent plant.
You know, I was thinking about this from a fertilizer company standpoint. Does it change the products that you recommend then to your growers that have those acres that weren't planted last year?
I don't think so. As your show has talked about many times, you know, we want to have a good crop nutrition plan right from the start. Start out with a good soil test report and develop a good crop nutrition program. So we may need to adjust the rates, may need to adjust the product lineup just a little bit, but the nutrients are all the same. The products are generally the same, and we want to attack that in a way that is going to be beneficial for that field and that crop this year.
All right, we get a lot of questions about purple corn quite often every year from somewhere, some part of the country, and somebody's struggling with this. And we think about getting phosphorus into our crop, and there are a lot of different phosphorus products out there. What are some of the things that growers should consider about having highly available phosphorus and having it longer through the season?
Sure. Well, phosphorus, as you say, is a vitally important nutrient, and putting on a liquid nutrient or liquid phosphorus product such as our ProGerminator would be certainly one way to address that. It provides phosphorus that's available right away. Typically, you'll find that purple corn in cold, wet soils early on in the season, so having that shot of phosphorus right away is going to help alleviate that. And then the ProGerminator does have an extended release program in it that allows for season-long phosphorus nutrition. And that's extremely important in making sure that everything comes to its optimal yields.
Hey, Jen, we're getting some feedback about zinc. What can you tell us about zinc? A lot of guys are saying the one that we're seeing deficient more often now is yellowing towards the top of the plant, and it ends up being zinc in a lot of their tissue tests. What do you want a grower to know about zinc? Is this something you address with starter? Is it something that you address with foliar feed? What's the best way to feed our crop?
For corn, I really like to make sure that our crops get fed through the soil. Putting a zinc product such as our Micro 500 or MicroLink Zinc through the starter program, either in furrow or 2x2, is still the best. Gives that crop that season-long zinc performance, and it's going to be there the entire time. Corn will respond to foliar applications of micronutrients, and zinc is among them. But to have the best opportunity for results, I still like the at-planting applications.
Hey, another comment I got, John, is about sulfur. And in a corn-soybean-wheat rotation, when is the best time to put sulfur on? Do you like to put it on with each crop? We've been putting a little bit of sulfur on with our corn-soybean rotation. How about in those three crop rotations?
Well, all three crops need sulfur, and of course sulfur and nitrogen are very closely associated. I do like to have sulfur applications to all of the individual crops. With corn and wheat, typically like to put it in with the nitrogen if I can. Soybeans, of course, we don't typically put a lot of supplemental nitrogen on soybeans, so getting sulfur in either at planting or as a foliar has shown some wonderful benefits to soybean production.
And as you mentioned, when we were talking about the unplanted acres from last year, sulfur is one that can move down with moisture through the soil. So yeah, you're right on the money that feeding each crop is going to be really important with a leachable nutrient like that. Talking with John Leaf with AgriLiquid. John, I know you're super busy this time of year. Thank you so much for being on. Really appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
Let's head down to Nebraska. We've got, over to Minnesota. Jim Fasching with us right now with Midwest Labs. Jim, how are you today?
I'm doing well, Brian. Thank you. Excuse me.
Oh, that's okay, Jim. We'll let that one slide today. It probably won't be the last time somebody calls me Brian, but it makes Brian smile every time.
Okay.
You know, we're talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn. And, you know, thinking about that, you get a lot of leaf tissue analysis in, and oftentimes it's a problem field where guys are trying to identify this. We see a lot of times white or yellow leaves at the top of the corn plant, especially when it's a foot tall to knee high, something like that. Is it best to pull those leaves that are at the very top like that, really showing that deficiency, or is it better to pull one a little bit lower?
Our preference in that type of scenario would be to, if you're looking at a corn plant, we'd want you to send a leaf to us with the most open or the most recently open collar on the corn plant and use that as a guide to decide whether it's a nutrient deficiency or you know, are some of those white corn leaves at the top of the plant due to a stretch of cold weather that maybe blanched them a little bit. A true reading will come from that leaf with the most open collar in our program.
Yeah, it's when you see those light colored or pale leaves like that too, I know there's some herbicide things. I've run into fields where guys have doubled up on a point row or something like that. So I always have to ask a lot of questions about this. What are the nutrients that you're getting more common questions about in terms of deficiencies in corn?
In corn, occasionally potassium is still kind of, from the primary element standpoint, is one we get questions on, as we see sometimes those values can drop off through the course of the season if a dealer or producer or consultant is using a progressive type tissue test program. They can start out okay, and then as that corn plant develops and grows, maybe those numbers drop down to less than a sufficient level. Micronutrients, zinc, we're doing better as far as making zinc applications to our corn crop. A lot of times it's part of a starter program. Some folks are broadcasting zinc out in the field to try to build that soil test level up a little bit. Manganese is one that's continually shows up a little bit on the low side across the wide range of our geographic area. And then boron is one that, because it's one of those mobile elements, like we were talking about earlier with John, that just kind of moves through the profile, and something we need to address either with a foliar application, or in some cases, folks are making later season side dress applications with a little bit of boron in their side dress nitrogen.
Talking with Jim Fasching here with Midwest Labs. And Jim, certainly a lot of these prevent plant acres guys struggle to get the soil test taken. I know we've seen a number of guys out getting soil tests pulled this spring. Hopefully we can address a lot of these things before they're showing up visually on the plants this year. Jim, thank you so much. Really appreciate having you on, and good luck here this spring.
All right. Thank you, John.
Talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn on our show today, and also taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD. We'll be right back after this.
Customer service goes a long way when trying something new. Ryan Shaw from Michigan shares how Soil Warrior helped him transition to strip tillage in his operation.
The Soil Warrior guys, they are amazing to work with. They made this jump in this transition extremely painless. One question that I get all the time is, how is the service and everything? And I said, well, actually, I get better service from them than I typically do my dealers uptown. They're just amazing.
More info at soilwarrior.com.
Your land is a legacy, a challenge from those who tended it before you to build on their foundations. At Corteva Agriscience, we understand what it means to be the stewards of a legacy. We embrace the challenge of building on the foundation of Dow AgroSciences to maintain your trust, to bring new solutions, to help you care for your land. See how we can help build your legacy at rangeandpasture.com.
Increase your productivity with Hypro's dual Riat control system. The dual nozzle body design allows you to drive at the speed you want while maintaining the rate and droplet size you need. Hypro, helping you spray better.
How much yield did you lose the moment you planted your seed? Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG. Designed and built by a farmer tired of seeing yield loss from poor stands, the Germinator gives your crop the strong start it needs for maximum yield. Visit farmshopmfg.com.
When it comes to my weed control, I know a head start can go a long way. That's why I spray early, so I can keep control all season long with a Roundup Ready Extend crop system, the system that makes the difference. This is my field.
Choose the Roundup Ready Extend crop system for control of more weeds than any other soybean system. Featuring Extendamax herbicide with vapor grip technology to manage tough-to-control weeds, including up to 14 days of soil activity, along with the field-proven performance of Roundup Ready to Extend soybeans. Now you have the right tools to extend your weed control and extend your yield with the system that makes the difference. Learn how you can put the system to work in your field when you visit RoundupReadyExtend.com. Extendamax is a restricted-use pesticide. Performance may vary. Always read and follow grain marketing and all other stewardship practices and pesticide label directions. Check local regulations for specific requirements in your state.
High-yield corn growers know that feeding the crop and soil are keys to maximizing yield potential. Nutex EDA and Reverb are specifically formulated to help manage limiting factors associated with today's farming conditions. Nutex EDA works within the plant to support nutrient mobility and utilization. Reverb focuses on the soil, providing beneficial trace elements which help condition the root zone for optimal microbial activity. Low use rates and superb tank mix compatibility make Nutex EDA and Reverb no-brainers in the high-yield grower toolbox.
You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. Thanks for joining us today. We're broadcasting from the Morton studio, and we're talking about visual nutrient deficiencies in corn. We would never see those in the state of Iowa, would we? Well, we've got Paul Castle with us right now with Iowa State. Paul, thanks for joining us.
Yeah, thank you.
You know, we think about high-yielding corn in Iowa all the time, but there are some areas that are struggling too. What do you normally see when guys are having issues with visual nutrient deficiencies? Are there some common culprits out there, certain nutrients that guys are struggling with a little more?
Yeah, it's mainly nitrogen. The last couple of years, like 2018, had some really wet areas that, you know, in late June, early July, and just a lot of waterlogged conditions and leaching conditions that, so we lost a fair amount of nitrogen. So that year in particular, we had some really bad nitrogen deficiency symptoms and stunted corn and reduced yields because of that. And even folks that had pattern tiled fields and even side grass, that, you know, we had so much rain and lost so much nitrogen that even that did not always solve the problem. So yeah, we see it. And we're really hopeful this year because we have, as we talked today, drier conditions and it looks like so far, and even a drier start to the spring, so maybe, just maybe, we'll alleviate some of those problems looking forward. But again, there's no guarantee on that.
Okay, so walk us through a strategy then. You've had 2 years in a row that have not been great in Iowa in terms of being too wet. Is split application, I would assume that's part of the plan, but what's your main plan for nitrogen when growers say, hey, I've lost nitrogen 2 years in a row, how do I beat that this year?
Well, you know, one thing starts with just good drainage, so that So we remove excess moisture and get the root zone dried out, or get it, you know, basically we want to remove water and have air in the growing in the root system, and that helps a lot. Of course, you might say, well, you lose nitrogen doing that. Well, maybe you do a little bit, but we still foster a better root growing environment and better growth, and the plant can access the nitrogen that is there. So that's one thing. And of course, that's not an easy proposition, because you can spend, you know, $400 or $500 an acre with the pattern tile drainage systems, but you don't need to do that to every acre, every situation. But that's one thing we start with. And we also just recommend people, you know, if they want to consider split application, that's not a guarantee that it'll yield better, but it may make it a little more weatherproof in a really wet year. And of course, it does allow you to adjust that rate a little bit too. But of course, the year you really need to do it is the year that's really difficult to do. So we've had folks that have bought large side dressing equipment, large acre side dressing equipment, and gone away from it and just done everything pre-plant. So, and people go back and forth on that. It's a difficult proposition. It can be important to do, but like I say, equipment time management wise, it can be difficult to accomplish.
You know, and part of that nitrogen source is manure. That adds a challenge to it too, because there's only certain times of year for the growers that they can actually get that manure out there. Are you changing things up with manure recommendations? I know, speaking to others at Iowa State, it's been quite a challenge the last couple of years getting stuff done in the fall, or getting stuff done even in the spring when guys need to. How do you handle that?
Yeah, it's a tough one. Fall of 2018, you know, the temperatures got, you know, early November, our soil froze on us. And so that pretty much ended the really effective manure. You know, we always recommend people to start to apply the manure, like liquid swine manure, which there's a lot of in Northwest Iowa. Apply that as late in the season as you can. And people want to do that because they see the better performance from the nitrogen when they do that. But then that year that we had it froze up early and made that really difficult. So there really wasn't much we could do about it. A lot of it got applied on snow and on frozen ground. And of course there were some losses there. Very difficult to estimate that loss. So we didn't really know. So usually that just meant more nitrogen fertilizer. So it's a difficult proposition. We apply the manure in the spring as well, but then of course timeliness and soil compaction issues limit that as well. So most folks figure it out. They see the benefits of liquid swine manure to their corn crops. So most folks figure it out, but it has been a challenge the last couple of years.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And also changing forms of nitrogen fertilizer. We're getting a lot more feedback from growers saying, well, we're moving away from anhydrous. We just don't have availability in our area like we used to. What are you seeing in terms of the forms of nitrogen getting used in Iowa?
Yeah, we're, you know, a lot of my area, we're still a big anhydrous ammonia users. It varies a little bit, but again, the last couple of springs have not been, fall or spring have not been conducive for it. So it's been difficult. And like you say, fewer dealers have anhydrous ammonia. And when they do, they might have it at just one or two locations. So some logistics come into play there, but people see the benefit of a liquid UAN application and speed at which that can be done and put the herbicide with it. So they make that application that really speeds up the spring process. But there's still that cost advantage for anhydrous ammonia. That makes a lot of people, makes that attractive to a lot of folks. So with a good fall, I think we'll see some people go back to that just to be able to spread out that workload and save some dollars there. So yeah, it's not an easy thing, but like I say, I think we see probably in general, probably more liquid UAN type applications replacing some of those anhydrous ammonia acres.
Talking with Paul Castle with Iowa State University. Paul, thanks so much for the information today. Really appreciate your time, and good luck here heading into the season.
You bet. Yeah, thank you. Thanks. Good to visit with you folks, and you folks have a good growing season as well.
You bet. Thanks. All right, Brian. Yeah, you know, when you have a good growing season, that does help on some of this. When rains are timely and our root growth is really good, like, yep, Paul mentioned something.
And heat.
The challenge of poor drainage, where we just don't have much oxygen in the soil and we can't get a big root system, it's hard to access nutrients even when they're out there in the field. And we may see a nutrient deficiency where we didn't expect one.
Yeah, but I want to come back to heat. Organic matter breakdown or mineralization. That is so important because that releases a lot of nitrogen some phosphorus and some sulfur. So we figure normally in the range of 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen per percent of organic matter. Well, it could be 20, it could be 30 for us. And that's kind of our area. So the colder you are, the less chance you have for breakdown. The warmer you are, the more chance you have for breakdown. But anyway, the point is, if we have 5% organic matter, that's 100 to 150 pounds of free N. That's a big deal. Anyway, I wanted to talk just to kind of wrap things up on nutrient deficiencies in general. When you're out looking at your fields here over the next few months, when you see nutrient, when you see yellowing or a different color, let's put it that way, on the lower leaves of plants, you're probably looking at NPK. Those are mobile nutrients in the plant, N, P, and K. So in other words, if the new growth is short on a nutrient, it robs it from the old growth. On the other hand, sulfur and many of the micronutrients, they are non-mobile in the plant. So if the new growth coming out, which is at the top of the plant, if it's short, well, then it just turns yellow because it can't steal it from other leaves or other parts of the plant. So that's really kind of what's going on. And here's the whole thing. If you see a nutrient deficiency, you have already lost a ton of yield. Now, hopefully you're able to figure out, hey, I'm going to have a nutrient deficiency by looking at your soil test, or even looking at your plant tissue analysis, you might pick it up before you visually see a nutrient deficiency. And again, I don't care what crop we're talking about, but the whole goal is we want to properly feed our crop all the way through. I mean, it's just like human health. If all of a sudden you're starting to get so run down and weak and we can visually see, oh my goodness, they're malnourished, that's terrible, right? So we want to try to figure out in our crops, just like the same thing here, we want to figure out before we go, oh my goodness, I got a disaster on my hands. Well, with nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, those are the major nutrients, the primary nutrients for plants, but they act totally differently from each other in soils. So nitrogen, it's easy to put some on in season. Phosphorus, it's much more of a challenge. You can't foliar feed and get stuff in with phosphorus very well into the plant. And also, phosphorus doesn't move in the soil, so you can't just lay some on the soil surface and say, oh, the rain's going to move it in. Well, you can do that with nitrogen. Can't do that with phosphorus. So potassium's kind of somewhere in between. Heavy soils, it doesn't move well. If it's really sandy and you got tons of rain, well then yeah, it's going to move. So anyway, all I'm saying here is you got to stay ahead of this stuff with soil testing and tissue testing. Look at the nutrients differently. That's really important. Try to figure out what you've got for a problem before you have the problem and then properly address it. So with the leachables like nitrogen, sulfur, boron, you can do some in season. With things that are non-mobile in the soil like phosphorus, potassium to some degree, and zinc, you got to be early. Well, we'll get to more of your questions in the Ag PhD mailbag next.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from FarmShop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why FarmShop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy, all the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
Heat, drought, wind, hail, northern corn leaf blight, gray leaf spot. If your corn is under stress, you are too. Get Veltima fungicide, swift activity, with fast payback, an expanded application window. Makes life simple, and it's the secure choice. With powerful residual for visibly healthier corn. Swift, simple, secure. Veltima fungicide. Call your BASF rep today. Always read and follow label directions. Veltima fungicide is not registered in all states.
You're all set with the 4x4 turbo diesel truck.
How about some options? Spray and bed liner?
Absolutely.
Tailgate step and Nerf bars?
Gotta have them.
Tie down hooks and stainless steel toolbox?
You know it.
Tinted windows?
Of course.
Options are good. That's as true in the field as it is with your pickup. In addition to taking care of tough weeds, new Open Sky herbicide gives you more rotational choices than ever before and an easy-to-handle formulation.
Gooseneck tow package?
Yep.
Discover more Open Sky details at OpenSkyHerbicide.com.
Imagine the perfect flow of grain from the field to the bin. Imagine a single rotor that ensures both quality and productivity. An advanced system that optimizes harvest settings on the go. You don't have to imagine. With features like AFS Harvest Command, an axial flow combine from Case IH always delivers the perfect flow for your operation. Find out how. Talk to your Case IH dealer today.
What do you think of when you hear Palmer Amaranth or Water Hemp? If you use Fierce herbicide in your soybean fields, you don't have to think about them at all. With two effective modes of action and up to 8 weeks of residual control, Fierce takes on even the toughest weeds like Water Hemp and Palmer Amaranth. Take control of your soybean fields and get incentives from Bayer Plus Rewards when you choose the power of Fierce herbicide. Talk to your local retailer today to put Fierce to work in your fields. Always read and follow label directions.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio, broadcasting from the Morton Studio today. Taking your calls and questions at 844-44-AG-PHD, or you can send us an email, radio@agphd.com. And we were talking about over the break, all right, we're looking at corn nutrient deficiencies, but obviously not everyone listening is planting corn. Or you may be thinking, you know what, hey, I got another crop besides corn, and I'm kind of concerned about this. A few years ago, we put together an app called the Ag PhD Crop Nutrient Deficiencies app, and our friends at AgriLiquid helped us gather some pictures and data on a bunch of different crops. I think we've got a couple of dozen crops on here at least, anything from peppers and cucumbers and garbanzo beans to avocado and alfalfa and soybeans and sugar beets. So lots of different crops here. So check that app out. It's a free download. You can click on any crop. Like right now, I'm just clicking on corn. And you can pull up most of the nutrients that your corn crop is going to need. Take a look at what things look like. You can click on zinc deficiency, potassium deficiency, molybdenum, manganese, copper, just all the different nutrients. And here's one thing that I would just pass along as a piece of information for you to consider. When I talk to a lot of the growers that are shooting for super high yields, maybe they're getting 50% more than the county average or 100% more than the county average, almost to the operation, guys are not only doing soil testing, they're also doing plant tissue analysis to try to identify which nutrients are holding them back. And then whenever they see something that looks different out in the field, maybe it's just a few plants here or there, this is one of the first things they check out. They pull up the Nutrient Deficiencies app or if they've got a book or something that they could take a look at and try to figure out, how does that corn plant look? Does it look similar to any of these things? What is my tissue analysis showing me based on my soil tests? What could it possibly be? And so often what we're seeing in the fields is a nutrient issue. And we've talked about this before, and I don't know if we mentioned this today, but many times these nutrient deficiencies, you don't even see them. Your plant is suffering. It's just a little bit short, and maybe no plants in the field are showing symptomology, or maybe just a few plants. You've got to catch it on the early side like that, or you're going to lose lots and lots of yield. So that's why we're talking about this today, and that's why we put together this app. Hopefully it helps you as much as it has our operation. Again, it's not just corn on the app. You can type in just about any crop and take a look at what nutrient deficiencies look like in that particular crop. Anything you want to add, Brian, to the nutrient deficiency discussion? You want to jump back into mailbag?
Did you mention our app?
That's what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
Sorry, I just stepped out for a second. And
yep.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was
It was interesting.
Talking about.
I was talking to an agronomist about untreated seed, untreated corn seed, and could a farmer plant untreated corn seed? There are some people out there that have to plant untreated corn seed in certain areas. So, for example, in the state of Oregon, you can't put a neonic insecticide on. Okay, that stinks, but that's the way it goes. There are some of these federal government lands, or even sometimes state government or tribal government lands, where they require that, hey, you can plant something here, but it can't have any treatments on it. Okay. So anyway, it's just, it always makes me nervous, though, especially when you're planting relatively early in a given geography, and you're going to have no fungicide, no insecticide, no biologicals on there. You're not giving a lot of, well, you're giving no protection to your seed. You're just counting on that it's going to be able to make it and tough it out on its own. So it basically means more seed mortality and lower yields. But anyway, I had to step out for a minute. But in terms of these nutrient deficiencies, there, I would say when Darren and I are looking at soil tests literally every day of the year, we get tests from all over the world, really, a lot from the United States and Canada. And what we commonly see is people are short on two or more micronutrients. So the five standard ones we talk about, zinc, boron, manganese, copper, iron, but then also I throw molybdenum in there too, and that's especially important for certain crops like alfalfa and soybeans, the legume crops. And it is more of an issue when pH is below 7 than when it's above. It's one of the few nutrients where it's actually more available the higher the pH. But anyway, where I'm going with this is don't just look at NPK. Don't just get a soil test. Don't just get a tissue test that shows you your NPK levels. We find for the most part people do a pretty good job on nitrogen. They do okay on phosphorus, a lot of times lacking on potassium, but I mean, that one we talk about all the time, but it's these other things. It's the secondary nutrients, whether that's sulfur or, like in sandy soils, magnesium. Sometimes even calcium. Darren was just showing me a calcium deficiency picture here during our last break. We were talking about that a little bit. And then certainly these micronutrients, big time issues. So just make sure you're getting complete soil tests. When you're doing plant tissue analysis, get complete tissue tests. And then you will have much more information. And hopefully, like I said at the beginning of the show, you can better invest your fertilizer dollars to make more money on your farm. All right, let's jump back to mailbag.
All right, got a comment here. This one comes from Eric in Wisconsin. He said, I've been in the seed business for about 30 years. I don't have an agronomy degree, but your program makes me wish that I did. Been battling some health challenges here, but just wanted to say thank you for all the information and enjoyment your show brings. I just want you to know your information is being put to good use and helping farmers in the area here. Hey, Eric, thanks for the email. Really appreciate that. And, but praying for you with the health challenges, that's no fun to fight through, too.
That's for sure. All right. Now, his comment about, I wish I had an agronomy degree. This is something that we always say to people. And don't get me wrong. I'm not telling you don't go to college or don't do that kind of thing. I think that's great if you do. But whether you do or not doesn't matter much 30 years down the road. So I got out of college 30 years ago. There's very little I learned in college that I still use today. So for Darren and me, our dad he was pretty talkative and had a lot of advice on a lot of things. But one of the things he always told us is he said, school is nothing more than learning how to learn. And I often tell young people this too. And here were my dad's words when I went to college. He goes, well, you're going to come back when you get done with 4 years of college, you're going to think you're all smart. You're not going to be. So you're going to come back and you're going to have to start learning from square one. College is nothing more than learning how to learn. And I have really found that to be true. So almost everything that Darren and I talk about today, we've picked up in the last 30 years from other farmers, from our own farm, a lot of new technologies. I mean, if you look at agriculture, it's tremendous the amount of new technology that there is in agriculture. It's super fun. So if you want change, if you want the need for constant learning, get into agriculture. It's great. And I realize there's still a lot of people that say, well, Dad always did it this way, Grandpa always did it this way. Well, with certain things. But we continue to tweak all those things and make them better and better. And I'm not saying what Dad or Grandpa did was wrong. Even like there's a field we're going to plant tomorrow that had terraces in it. Well, it's not a super steep field or anything, but our grandpa put terraces in, whatever it was, 50, 60 years ago, because He had to. You couldn't do no-till. You couldn't do strip-till back then because we didn't have good enough equipment. We didn't have good enough herbicides. We didn't have good enough insecticides. I mean, things have completely changed. So now we don't need those terraces that are out there. And by the way, those terraces were too small to get any big equipment through. So, you know, we had to do some dirt work out there here in the last probably 10, 15 years. But anyway, the point is there's lots of change out there all the time, and just keep learning. That's what we talk about. I mean, we're trying to hopefully give you information about everything when it comes to crop production so you can do a better job on your farm.
All right, thanks for the feedback there, Eric. Really appreciate that. Dan said, spreading 100 to 150 pounds of urea pre-plant and then little anhydrous with our disc drill at seeding. The urea is not worked in, and we usually don't get a bunch of moisture at seeding time. We're farming in north central North Dakota. Should we be using a stabilizer?
Yes. Yep. Urea, you're going to start to lose that in about 48 hours. You got 48 hours to get rain, but if you don't, then you're going to start losing it. So even when you're in northern North Dakota and you're cooler, you still have, keep in mind, you do have more sunlight than anywhere in the United States when you're that far north. So the sun's beating down on it. Get a stabilizer on there. That's my advice.
All right, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this.
Success isn't just about maintaining your operation, how you make out for the season, or how much you can get from each acre. It's about doing precisely what needs to be done to feed your crop and grow your legacy. All the way down to the last drop. AgroLiquid Precision Crop Nutrition. Apply less, expect more. Find a retailer at agroliquid.com.
You deserve to have a building that will last for generations. With more than 110 years of experience and thousands of satisfied customers, Morton Buildings is the industry leader you can trust. Unlike other construction companies, you work with Morton Buildings craftsmen from conception to completion. There's no better time to buy. Lock in your new building for 2020 today. Contact your local Morton sales office or visit mortonbuildings.com.
You need a powerful herbicide to fight the war on weeds. Bellum is Rotam North America's mesotrione herbicide, and it fights against the annual broadleaf weeds attacking your cornfields. Winning this battle means higher yields, lower cost to you, and maximized profitability. For long-lasting residual weed control, check out Evinco Vilify and our newest mix, Rixa. For application, flexibility, and season-long control, that's Evinco Vilify and Rixa, powered by Bellum. For more information, visit bellumherbicide.com. That's B-E-L-L-U-M herbicide.com.
Challenging field conditions often make harvest difficult. Can your corn head handle it? The GTS X10 corn head from AgriUS is a rugged, cost-effective alternative to heavier, more traditional heads. Constructed of durable yet lightweight aluminum, the X10 puts less strain on your combine without losing harvest effectiveness. And it is 40% lighter than traditional heads, reducing field compaction in those less than ideal conditions. For more information, give us a call at 833-4-AGRA-US.
Worried about glyphosate-resistant weeds and grasses in your corn? Unleash the power of new Impact Z herbicide and get the early post-application advantage you've been waiting for. Save $3 per acre when you combine Impact Z with a qualifying insecticide purchase. Go to buy2save3.com for details. Buy2save3 is a service mark, and Impact Z is a trademark owned by Ambac Chemical Corporation. All rights reserved. Impact Z is a restricted-use pesticide. Always read and follow label instructions.
Introducing the Germinator Closing Wheel from Farm Shop MFG.
We interrupt this message for an important announcement. In these uncertain times, many farmers are looking to prolong their grain storage. That's why Farm Shop MFG is offering a $12.50 credit per germinator towards the purchase of a Grain Temp Guard Alarm DT, up to $200 per unit. Protect last year's crop and start 2020 off right. Go to farmshopmfg.com to order today.
Welcome back. You're listening to Ag PhD Radio. We're right in the middle of the Ag PhD mailbag time here in the Morton studio. Just give us a call at 844-44-AG-PHD with your agronomic questions, or you can email us, radio@agphd.com. Got one from David and Jeannie in Arizona who said, every once in a while, RFD runs something else instead of your program. Should we write him a nasty letter, or are you guys not upset about this at all? Well, thanks for the communication, David and Jeannie. They do every once in a while have something they have to preempt us for. And, you know, the folks at RFD have just been awesome to us. They've been great to work with. They generally run our show multiple times during the week. So, yeah, if it's not on your preferred time, typically they're running us at other times as well. But thanks for the feedback. We do appreciate that. And we do appreciate that you're a loyal viewer of our show. That's awesome. And if you write a letter to RFD, just tell them how much you love Ag PhD. That would be great. We'd appreciate that. I got one from Brad here. He said, you guys were talking about lime the other day, and I'm just kind of curious, with soil testing to determine where I should lime, how small a grid size do I need, and then what pieces of information do you need on that soil test to make a good lime recommendation?
Well, the smaller the grid size, the better, but it depends on the variability of the field. Now, what we typically find is 5 and 10 acre grids are too big if you're going to lime. I'd just assume they be 1 acre grids, or maybe even smaller for some people. All depends on how many dollars you're going to spend. So let's put it this way. I'll just give you the example off our own farm where we were doing a lot of 5 acre grid work to lime. And then when we did 1 acre grids, we realized, uh-oh, we really screwed this up. So we had areas in our 5 acre grids that were actually just fine in pH. Well, now we really made them high. And to fix that, we had to put elemental sulfur on. So we lost yield number one. We overspent on lime number two. And then we had to spend more money on sulfur to fix the problem number three. So that's dumb, dumb, and dumb. And I'm just telling you the mistake we made on our own farm. So it cost us all kinds of money. And if we just would have spent $9 more an acre is about all it amounted to, then we would have been in a lot better shape. So all I'm getting at here is if you are worried that, man, that soil testing thing is going to cost so much money, yeah, I mean, it does cost some money, but you're not going to do it that many times. And, you know, in terms of getting your field evened out, if you just even go to small grids one time, you can even a lot of the things out. Now, hopefully, you can go back to some bigger grids. But in terms of what you're looking for on the soil test to make the recommendation, a lot of it really comes down to the buffer index. So that's typically what we're using. And what the buffer index comes from, it's really what your cation exchange capacity is. So in other words, how heavy that soil is and where your pH is. So if you just simply talk to your lab, they'll tell you what you need to do this right. But those are the key things you're looking for. And then the other side of it is your lime test. So not only run a standard lime test, but I'm also interested in what else is in that lime. So us, for example, we get water treatment lime, and we have a lot of great nutrients in there. So we get free iron, manganese, and a number of other nutrients that I want and need, and it allows me to cut back on my applications of certain fertilizers. So just make sure you know what all is getting put on your soil, what all the nutrients are, everything else, and then you should be in good shape.
Thanks for the question. I really appreciate that, Brad. Got one here from Lucas in Virginia. He said, your show's great, has a lot of great agronomic advice, but I need some startup farm advice today. I'm currently working for a retailer 5 hours away from my family's farm. And my dad is now getting to the point where he's ready to hand some of the decisions over to my older brother who's been farming with him and myself. But I'd still need some off-farm income. So I've got a seed company nearby home that's offered me a job, but it's a significant pay cut from what I'm making now, 5 hours away. Just wondering if you would have any advice for me on other things I should consider or if I should just take the hit and start farming.
Well, that's a personal life decision. It all depends on what you want to do, what you like to do, and what
depends,
you feel like you're called to do.
It depends on your age and situation. Let's say you're single and you're 22. Maybe move back in with mom and dad for a little bit. Now all of a sudden you don't have all the expenses. You got 5 hours away from home, and maybe you make it work that way.
Yep, but I also find a lot of successful
agronomists. Don't move in with your brother. Just don't move in with your brother, Lucas.
I do find a lot of successful agronomists that they have the opportunity to go back and farm, and they go, yeah, I don't know. I like what I'm doing right now, and I don't have all the risk. I mean, farming is a tremendously risky. It's got so much risk to it. And yes, there are things you can do to manage that to some degree, but I mean, when you're getting into the riskiest profession versus if you have something safer like being an agronomist or, you know, let's face it, almost anything else, that's tough. So if you do great at being an agronomist, maybe you'll make more money that way than you would as a farmer. Who knows? But if you want to get back into it, I mean, you certainly can. There are plenty of opportunities.
Thanks for the question, Lucas, and good luck to you. It's a great opportunity. It's great to have multiple things that you have a chance to do. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's just, you know, when you say, okay, Dad is willing to hand over some of the decision-making to us, well, if you haven't been on the farm in a while, and especially if you're 5 hours away, things could be a little bit different. I just think about our geography where I live, and if I drive 5 hours away, farming's different. I need to farm differently. So all I'm saying is you're going to want to ease your way back into that. And that probably the number one piece of advice that our dad gave us was don't make big mistakes. In other words, if you want to try new things, that's great. You absolutely want to try new stuff. That's how you improve. But try it on a small scale first and prove it out before you start changing the whole farm and all of a sudden you go, oh man, that was a disaster and I did it on every single acre.
Awesome. Thank you, Lucas. Good luck. It's going to be fun. And as you have questions, just send us an email, radio@agphd.com. Again, we'd love to help. Got this from Josh. He said, I'm growing soft white wheat in north central Oregon, and I'm wanting to try some foliar zinc and boron. Wondering what the best time to apply is. I've been told zinc during herbicide timing and boron around flowering with my fungicide would be good options. Yep. What are your thoughts? I'm also interested in trying a mixture of micros at herbicide timing.
Sure. And it all depends on, so the timings are probably correct. The zinc more is needed a little earlier. The boron is especially super important at flowering. But let's put it this way. Number one, we don't know if you're short on either nutrient right now. And two, we don't know, you know, in terms of spraying either one of those at the timing you suggested, would that give us the very best return? Because we don't know during the season, are you running into shortages or how are you sitting there? So what I'm suggesting here is you run some more soil tests or send us your soil tests. We could sure take a look at them for you. And also pull some plant tissue analysis as you go throughout the season. I'd also suggest if you're going to do some foliar feeding, you could try a couple different products and see which product gives you the best response, not just in yield, but also you could pull tissue samples before and after and just see which one raised my levels a little higher. So a lot of ways for you to go with that. Oh, on zinc too, keep in mind that doesn't move very well in soil. So if you spray it out there and it doesn't hit the leaf, you aren't going to get a lot out of that. Well, you're not going to get anything out of it this year if it doesn't hit the leaf. Boron could move in soil. Now, I realize in your area you don't have a lot of rainfall in season, but I'm just saying there's a big difference there. Zinc is pretty immobile in soil. Boron is fairly mobile in soil.
All right. Thanks for the question, Josh. This is from Ken, and he said, I want you to explain a little bit more about how tiling prevents flooding. I don't really understand with the winter months that you get. If you have tile, does that mean it pulls more water in and it freezes in the soil and releases later? Or how does it actually work having tile in there in your climate?
Okay, so the reason why it reduces flooding is because you're going to slowly release water over a long period of time. A lot of tile is set up for quarter inch to half inch drainage coefficient. That means only a half an inch leaves our field over a 24-hour time period. So if I had a 4-inch rain, that'd take 8 days to get it out. Well, if I have untiled ground and I have no reservoir to hold any water because I'm plumb full of water, I get a 4-inch rain and it all runs off maybe in 3 hours. So that's flooding versus very, very much reduced flooding with or without tile.
Thanks for the question, Ken. Really appreciate that. And thanks to you for listening today. Be sure to join us again each weekday for more Ag PhD Radio. Now stay tuned for Rob Sharkey and Shark Farmer Radio.